Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I have no comments today because we have a lot to talk about. Now, we are nearing the completion of our Tribute to Charles Krauthammer series. But for today's podcast, I want to continue our discussion of the essay found in Chapter 14 of Things That Matter, which is titled The Age of Holy Terror. And the essay is titled September 11th, 2001, and it's found on page 285. Now, to help me discuss this essay, back in the studio with me today is my friend Grant Turgeon. Welcome back, Grant.
What an honor. Thank you.
Thanks so much for taking the time to come on JBL. But I think we're all getting relief because my classes are over, the final is done, I just have to correct it. But anyway, so let's try to pick up the discussion where we were last time. We were talking about Charles Krauthammer really being angry at the fact that it seems like America can't even they can't even know who the enemy is. And, you know, all the things with September 11, 2001, and actually we didn't even know how to deal with it. And, you know, they're going to, like, issue subpoenas and, you know, bring people to justice. And of course, Charles Krauthammer says, why don't we just go beat the slop out of them, you know?
Well, it is astounding because it can't be stressed enough that this essay was written the day after the attack, and he already can tell the entire U.S. approach is totally off and it will lead to failure. The longer time goes on, it's more astounding that he actually knew the very day after, based on the few things they'd already said, that they were going to do it all wrong.
Yeah. Now, I can agree it was numbing what happened and it was devastating, but really, if you're going to be a leader in American government, you've got to have a clear head instantly. And if everybody out there listening today was listening to last week's program, if you haven't, you really need to really put these two programs together. But the thing is, I do think there were politics involved, and it probably wasn't as obvious as it is today. I'm going to read at the top of page 286. This is a really good quote. It says, he's talking about, you know, the men that, you know, captured the four, you know, planes and rammed them into buildings and killed over 3,000 people. He says, this is a formidable enemy. To dismiss it as a bunch of cowards perpetrating senseless acts of violence is complacent nonsense. People willing to kill thousands of innocents while they kill themselves are not cowards. They are deadly, vicious warriors and need to be treated as such. Nor are their acts of violence senseless. They have a very specific aim, to avenge alleged historical wrongs and to bring the great American Satan to its knees. That's the day after this happened. I don't think you heard anybody else say that.
It's great that he points out this language, the cowards and the senseless acts of violence, because in the almost 19 years since, we've heard these phrases constantly. It's almost like robotic playback. Every time there's any kind of a national tragedy, any kind of a shooting or attack of any kind, it's always a senseless act of violence, and it's always done by cowards. But the thing is, whenever someone wakes up in the morning and they go to a school and they shoot it up, for example, they didn't just decide to do that morning.
No.
It wasn't just a senseless act. It was premeditated. It was planned out. Something was very wrong with that person for a very long time. And to act like it just happened in a split second because that person happened to own a gun is putting impossible amounts of pressure on the government to somehow stop all these things from happening. We have to realize that a lot of enemies, a lot of people who do things like this are ready for it to happen. They've been saving up. They've been plotting this out for a long time. And it just shows the kind of preparation we need to do as a nation to stop these things from happening,
right,
too.
Right. Even the fact that they hijacked four jets, even the fact that they had to change GPS, they had really well-trained pilots. I mean, these are not, you know, Piper Cub pilots. These are jet pilots, you know, and I think, if I even remember back to it, I think even a couple of them were trained by the U.S.
Right. That's the sad part.
That's really sad. But the thing is, you know, there is still, I think, this climate in America, and it's really in the radical left that here, and I think we can apply some of this to even like the COVID-19 crisis. I mean, think about it. Is no one in the media wants to even come close to admitting that the Chinese could have planned this. And if President Trump says that, he's a racist. If President Trump says that this may have started in a Wuhan lab and got out, he's a racist. Why? He's going to destroy relations with China. But the thing is, China is one of our top enemies. And but it's the top enemy of the whole West.
Right. China is really coming to the forefront as a major enemy of ours. And a few Republicans have mentioned that there have been reports or rumors of this disease being possibly leaked on purpose. And even if it wasn't, why are they spending so much time in a lab operating with the disease in some fashion? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless you try to figure out, okay, what does China think about the U.S.? Yeah. Why would something like this happen? What would their motive possibly be?
Yeah, no, I'm not a scientist. I'm not up on all of this. But I know the other day I heard on the news how ridiculous it is to believe that this got transferred from a bat, because Chinese have been eating bats for centuries.
Very true.
They've been eating bats for a long time. But the thing is, even the other day, the Chinese are not cooperating. They're still not cooperating. They're not going to let any of our experts come in to help them figure this out, because they don't want us to. And the thing is, you know, it's to their advantage to wreck the American economy. Absolutely. And I think President Trump, and again, I'm not. You know, a great politician or big on it, but I think he sees that this COVID-19, you know, pandemic, it has a more nefarious bent to it than what people can see.
Well, it seems like China could have done probably 10 different things going back to probably last October or November to stop this from going around the world. If they really wanted to, if they actually wanted to tell the truth about what was going on and try to give the necessary information so that other nations could fight it, but they didn't. Yeah. It just clearly they made below minimal effort to stop this.
Right.
And then you just have to ask why.
Right.
Why is this happening?
Right. And so, you know, President Trump wants to investigate, and of course they ridicule him. Were you racist? You're going to ruin everything, you know. So I think it's interesting that Charles Krauthammer at this time, you know, back at 9/11, he saw that America was having trouble recognizing the enemy. You know, they were really having trouble, and you know, how many times have Americans heard, you know, Islamic people? We're going to get to who the real head of this is in this. We have to get to it in this program, but the thing is, we were called Great Satan. You know, the tiny nation of Israel is called the Little Satan. They burned the American flag. You know, I mean, we've all seen that. We all saw that around this time. We all saw how they hate America. So why did we not even suspect that anything like this could happen?
Well, that's a really great question. I mean, the fact that they hate us this much, yet we couldn't seem to comprehend even the possibility of them mass murdering us, it really does seem odd after all this time, especially all this time we've had to look back on this and try to take lessons away from it. why are we so almost willfully naive to acknowledge the enemy and just at least pay a little bit of attention to their stated hatred for us?
Right, right. And that's why I think a lot of us, you know, here, certainly at the college, and certainly, you know, because of our understanding of Bible prophecy, so many of us were concerned with this nuclear deal with Iran. Why would you even, you know, want to make a deal with them? You know, they are our enemy. And the thing is then when it comes out that, you know, President Obama and Joe Biden was supportive of giving them, what, billions of dollars? They sent them the cash? And of course, you know, Iran keeps giving the world, you know, they thumb their nose at the world saying, we're not going to let you check our arsenals anyway. And so, you know, it never really stopped their production of uranium.
No.
But if President, once he steps out of it, I mean, he is like enemy number one worldwide. You know, even the European nations hate him because he was the only one to stand up and say, these people are our enemy. And yet they've had terror attacks in Germany. They've had terror attacks in Britain, you know. And so I mean, Krauthammer, I don't think really necessarily understood, you know, but they made President Bush a buffoon. They're making President Trump a buffoon. And, I mean, these are nations around the world are doing it.
Right. And that's – it really does show that common sense is extremely rare today. Like you mentioned about Mr. Trump, how the whole world is against him when he does something that common sense and all the facts – dictate that he should have done, pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. Why is the whole rest of the world upset at him for that? It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. No. I mean, it's really beyond what we could analyze physically even. We even have to take it to another level to figure out why the whole world was upset about that.
Right, right. And of course, now the whole world is excited that we're locked down because it's saving the planet. Meanwhile, to me, the most shocking statistics in all of this are the nation of India. How many billion people do they have? They locked it down because they had, what?
Ten deaths? Maybe.
And now, of course, you know, Deepika Azariah is here. You know, she's Mr. Hirma's assistant on, you know, our publications, you know, getting our publications organized and printed. And she told me, she says, this is going to be devastating for India because people are going to start starving. They're going to starve because they have to get paid every day. And they do their little jobs and they get paid and they go buy food. That's how it works. She said, if they can't work, they're going to starve. And so guess what's happening in India right now? Massive starvation.
Again, a situation where all of these decisions being made do seem to be defying common sense again. Right. Everyone is worried about a disease where the stats are horrifically inflated and we don't even seem to think about the billions of people's lives that are affected just by everything being shut down. Not from getting the disease and getting sick and dying, but from just having their entire lives disrupted and destroyed by losing their jobs and not being able to provide for themselves.
Right. One of the most radical governors, you know, to just as we know, he's trying to push his will. This morning on Mr. Stephen Fleury's program, he was come on and he said he doesn't understand it because the COVID-19 is happening for all those people that have been locked down. They're locked down in their houses, and actually the cases are increasing, not from the people that are breaking the law and getting outside and getting sun and some fresh air, but the people that are staying in their homes locked down are getting sick. And he doesn't understand it. Well, the thing is, you've been told the wrong thing. The science, the experts have been telling us the wrong thing. And of course, you know, I don't think we need to repeat it too much, but I'm so glad that Neil Ferguson got found out. You know, here he's telling us you have to lock down the whole world, and he can't even lock himself down, and probably gave, you know, the Prime Minister of England COVID-19, you know, but the thing is, we better stick close to this essay, and we're getting a little bit off topic, sorry, but I still think it's important.
It just shows how relevant all of these concepts are from something that happened almost 19 years ago. All the principles are the same today.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think everyone thought that was really bad, but actually what we have now is worse. And it doesn't seem worse because, as your uncle said on the radio today, people in England don't want to go back to work. They got all the money they need, and it's nice weather. They want to just keep playing, you know. So, but listen to this. This is really good. This is page 286 in the middle. He goes on, you know, nor is the enemy faceless or mysterious. We do not know for sure who gave the final order, but we know what movement it comes from. The enemy has identified itself in the public and openly. Our delicate sensibilities have prevented us from pronouncing its name. And so isn't that true today? The same thing is, it's like what's repeating itself, only it's just the magnitude is just amazing, you know. So anyway, you know, he goes on and he says, I thought this was eye-opening to me because actually we've known this a lot longer, I think. But he says in the very next quote down, he says, its name is Radical Islam. He says, not Islam as practiced peacefully by millions of the faithful around the world, but a specific fringe political movement dedicated to imposing its fanatical ideology on its own societies and destroying the society of its enemies, the greatest of which is the United States. So he called it right. I mean, to me, I don't believe he was reading the trumpet at this time, but maybe he had been. I mean, I really don't know, and he probably wouldn't admit it or say it. But you and I both know, we both know someone who has been declaring the enemy as radical Islam since the early 90s.
That's true. And it seems like today we're still trying to see if the radical left will say radical Islam radical Islamic terrorism. It's all this time later, almost two decades later, and they're still not acknowledging that. It does seem like maybe here he's a little bit too lenient on the general population of Islam, because many studies have shown that like 10 or 15% of Muslims are fine with terrorist attacks if they think that will advance the cause of the religion. Right. And also, many of the ones who say that they are not okay with any of that, their book does tell them they're allowed to lie to the infidel to deceive us into having a false sense of security. Also, a lot of them who, if they really are peaceful, they're considered infidels by the ones who are following the book more closely.
Right.
So that just shows a lot of it. We're just pretty willfully deceived about the seriousness of the religion itself.
Yeah.
We don't want to acknowledge that the book actually does say some pretty bad things, and the terrorists are following the book actually pretty well.
Yeah, it's a violent religion. I mean, of course, you know, I taught comparative religion early on, and the thing is, it's shocking. I mean, they have blood feuds. They kill each other. If they don't agree with each other, they destroy each other. So why wouldn't they destroy us?
They're like 99.9% similar to the other branch of Islam, but they've got one difference pretty much that causes them to, as soon as there's no other enemies outside Islam, to turn on each other and slay each other. I mean, it's just violent to the core.
Right, right. The thing I think where he does get a little wishy-washy, of course, he's not wishy-washy about Israel. He says that, he goes on to say, and we don't necessarily have to read this whole quote, but Israel, and he's talking about the tiny nation of Israel, or we would call it Judah, Israel is an affront to radical Islam, and thus, of course, must be eradicated. And of course, the Jewish people live with this constantly, and I think it could be really depressing. I mean, this whole thing with the lockdown now has just been, I mean, it really kind of get discouraging to a lot of people. And I know in our neighborhood, people don't care anymore. They're all getting out and they're having a great time. You know, there's one neighbor, I really know him that well, but as soon as it gets dark, his driveway fills up with other cars, and there's cars out on the street. So maybe they're having extended birthday parties. I don't know, because there seems to be a lot of parties going on. But the thing I think is interesting is his analysis now. He says, how do we know? In other words, he's talking about, look, you got to look at Saudi Arabia. You got to look at Kuwait. You got to look at Turkey. You got to look at the Persian Gulf. And he said, these people, they corrupt Islamic youth. And so he said, well, how can we prove it? And then he goes on and he talks about Hezbollah. He talks about Hamas. He talks about the Islamic Jihad. He talks about Osama bin Laden. He talks about Afghanistan. You know, so he's saying, look, we got to look to these areas. But he still comes up wrong in there. And I think as so many of the other ones have too, is he said, well, if Osama bin Laden is the problem, then we have to go after Afghanistan. He's still wrong. And so the thing is, he's right about so many things, but he still can't see the whole picture. And the thing is, Mr. Gerald Fleury has seen the whole picture. Since the 1990s, he said the problem or the head of the snake is Iran.
Right. Pundits are just coming around to that now. He's been saying it for several decades. That's what sets God's work apart and God's man apart, the fact that we've known this for so long just because the Bible says so. Imagine being someone out there like Charles Krauthammer looking at the entire Islamic world. What is there, like something like 70 majority Muslim nations on the planet? So how could you, it's hard to narrow it down, especially back then when Iran was a bit more subtle. It was a bit more unclear who the dominant force was. Now it's pretty obvious, but who's been saying it this whole time?
Right. There's just one. And the thing is, I would like to all of you listeners out there would like to say to you that there is a really good booklet that you can get by Mr. Gerald Fleury. It's called The King of the South. And it's free to you. You can download it at thetrumpet.com. And if you don't have access to download, you can request it free at thetrumpet.com. And we'll send it to you. And there won't be any follow-up. We're not going to put your name on a list or anything. But it is really, really worth reading. And it will really give you the right perspective. And the reason why we have that right perspective is because we believe in the Bible, but we also believe all the Bible, and we definitely believe Bible prophecy. And so, again, I think Krauthammer could get it so right on so many issues. And I just want to read one of these last quotes. Let's go to page 287 so you can see what we're talking about here. He says, but when we do, and he's talking about bringing people to swift justice, he said, there should be no talk of bringing these people to swift justice. As Karen Hughes dismayingly promised mid-afternoon yesterday, an open act of war demands a military response, not a judicial one. And then he goes on to say, military response against whom? It is absurd to make war on the individuals who send these people. The terrorists cannot exist in a vacuum. They need a territorial base of sovereign protection. For 30 years, we have avoided this truth. If bin Laden was behind this, then Afghanistan is our enemy. Any country that harbors and protects him is our enemy. We must carry the war to them. Now, that's where I think he makes his big mistake. And it's Iran, really, that's supporting Hezbollah and Hamas. I mean, they're getting money from them. And, you know, all that billions of dollars of cash that we gave to Iran, where do you think it went? Hezbollah.
Straight into terrorism.
Yeah. And so the thing is, again, I think I'm certainly not wanting to criticize, Charles Krauthammer here, but he got it wrong. And, of course, America's lost the war against Afghanistan. I mean, we did think it was Afghanistan, and we did think we could solve the problem by going after Afghanistan. Mr. Gerald Fleury never saw it that way. He said, you got to go after the head of the snake. Well, and no one wants to do that.
The good thing here about this, even though he does pinpoint the wrong nation, this is actually more encouraging than that earlier statement that he made about the millions and millions of peaceful Muslims. This time he's saying you have to hold the whole group accountable for knowing who is in your midst and for not saying something about it. That needs to be applied worldwide. If there are a large number of malcontents in a group, the whole group is responsible for getting rid of them. That should be true in any situation, especially when murder is involved.
Right, right, right. So again, we do really have a lot of respect for Charles Krauthammer. We don't want to, certainly don't want to diminish that. But let me just read these last couple of quotes here. It says, "We should seriously consider a congressional declaration of war. That convention seems quaint, unused since World War II, but there are two virtues to declaring war. It announces our seriousness both to our people and to the enemy, and it gives us certain rights as belligerents of blockade, for example." So again, I don't necessarily feel like he's really on target there either, because we had declared war and it didn't work. I mean, we just are, as Bible prophecy shows, we're just weak-willed. We won't go in there and do the whole job. We go in there and tinker, you know.
No point to that. There's no point to doing it half-heartedly, to being neutral or not being a hardliner. Yeah. You have to go in there totally determined, and the whole nation, all the citizens have to be determined to go in there and stay there until the job is done.
Right, right.
Without that support, you're never going to succeed in the Middle East, especially.
Yeah. And even Crowder does bring up earlier in the essay, he says that, you know, hey, you're dealing with people that are fanatical suicide. You know, they're skilled pilots. You know, they're very committed to their cause, to the death.
Right.
You know, they believe that the more trouble and things they stir up, and again, I think we have to be honest, saying, what has this COVID-19 done for them? It shows them how they could really get to the whole world. I mean, why couldn't they spread a virus now? I mean, they could really do a lot of damage.
Well, that's one way that the terrorists put us to shame, because we clearly have been exposed as the cowards. We call the terrorists cowards, yet we're afraid. We're just absolutely terrified of a virus that has very little chance of even affecting hardly anybody. But we've shut down everything because of our fear.
Right.
Meanwhile, they're willing to die for what they believe in.
Right.
What is our average American willing to die for? It is a question that needs to be asked.
Yeah, well, we've had so much. That's the problem. We've had so many good things in this country that we've actually turned it into evil. You know, it's like, even when the latest Trump that's coming out does have some articles about, you know, what are people doing with their time now? Well, they're smoking dope. They're drinking. They're watching pornography all day. They're sitting around in their pajamas doing nothing. You know, I'm sure their grass is too long. I'm sure their flowers are need weeding, you know. You know, but they're, and the government has helped foster it. Well, we'll give you the money. You know, I know ever since I've been, I mean, my dad really helped us. And when we got into like eighth grade, he wanted us to get part-time jobs. And then he made us responsible for buying our clothes. And I mean, they would always help us when we needed it. But he said, if you want to have fun and do fun things, you better be working to make the money to make it. Well, we just took that away from billions of people. You don't have to work now. Just stay at home and don't get sick.
Work builds character, and
right,
staying at home almost always is going to tear it down. And when you have no character, you're going to be a lot more fearful, and it's going to be so much easier for the enemies to attack and win.
Right, right. So here's the last quote. He said, and this related to the Cold War. He said, "The long peace is over. We sought this war no more than we sought war with Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, or Cold War with the Soviet Union. But when war was pressed upon the greatest generation, it rose to the challenge. The question is, will we?" And I think here we are, how many years later now? We're still struggling with the whole idea of terrorism. So that's the end of that essay. Well, I just wanted to thank you for coming on with me, Grant.
Thank you.
So remember now, people out there listening, you really need to read this booklet on the King of the South by Mr. Gerald Fleury. And it really will help you with this whole idea of understanding radical Islam and how it's going to really play here into world news here pretty quickly. So Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Now, next time, I will give my final thoughts on Mr. Krauthammer as an essayist. Now, we have been reading selected portions of Charles Krauthammer's book of essays titled Things That Matter. And so there's still just a little bit more to come. Now, remember, you can buy this book at Amazon.com, and you can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. And, again, I highly recommend you obtain a copy of this book, and please study it. Now, in about 2 weeks, we will end our series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. And for our summer series, I will be moving back to classic literature. Now, all the selections for this series have been chosen, and I'll discuss details with you next time. But I decided I will tell you the first classic piece of literature that we will be reading is George Orwell's 1984. Now, he has some great lessons to teach us, so be sure to pick up a copy of this book and get reading. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. Streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.